Having specific concrete skills to get a job done is great. Having the soft skills that you can take to any job is even better. And speaking and communication is at the top of that list. Move ahead quickly in your company and become a great entrepreneur just by opening your mouth. Core Confidence Life wants to help you reach that pinnacle. We are a talent development, promotion, and coaching service that will have you speaking confidently with power and persuasion. Whether it's running a meeting or winning clients, we'll take you from a quiet whisperer to a competent communicator. Just contact us, coreconfidencelife.com. That's www.coreconfidencelife.com. Core Confidence Life. Welcome to the Core Confidence Life podcast. I am your host, Dennis, broadcasting to you from New York City, sitting here right behind the mic here on my desk. Don't forget to follow us on social media. That's Facebook, right? Core Confidence Life. Twitter, that Core Confidence Life, right? YouTube, we're everywhere. You are. And our podcatchers, whatever podcatcher you like, whether it be Apple or Spotify, you can even ask Alexa to play the Core Confidence Life if you so choose. And if you want to get back episodes of this show, just go to coreconfidencelife.com and click on CCL Podcast. There are a lot of hot button issues going on in the world today, and often we find ourselves either on one side of the argument or the other side, or sometimes in the middle. And there are people who have broken up friendships over things like politics, and they don't speak to their family members anymore, all this other stuff, all over labels. You liberal, you conservative, you communist, you socialist. All these labels that categorize people into these one-size-fits-all things, and then we kind of make other assumptions based on that one little thing we think we know. And this idea of reducing people down to labels is something that needs to be tackled. Now, we've done shows like this before, how to have constructive conversations with people who you disagree with. But now we're going to go deeper into labels. What are labels? How are they constructed? And did you know that your brain actually gets a dopamine hit off of negativity? On our program today, we are speaking to William Selvanius. He is an author and a brain expert, and he's going to talk to us about labels. What are labels? How are they constructed? How can we deconstruct labels and get our brains to stop responding to negative stimuli? And also, what is negative to you may not be negative to me. So we're going to be talking about all things brain, all things label, and being able to see people as humans instead of political parties and shorthand notions of identity. How you doing, William?
I'm doing fine. Hope things are good on your end.
Well, I certainly hope so, too. So we're here talking about labels. Now, we all maybe recognize the word labels, you know, because everything has a label. You know, that thing is called an apple. That thing is called a microphone. So we have names for things. But when right. we talk about labels, we're talking about maybe words that we use to categorize other people, and those words may or may not be always accurate, and they can have an effect on many aspects of our lives. So talk a little bit more about labels, and what do you mean by labels and things like that?
Well, the last thing you said is indeed what I'm talking about when I talk about labels. You know, they had their roots out in the same thing that we use when we name an object. Labels were originally ways that we could facilitate communication about people and about situations. But labels serve in our social context, our political context, they serve to convey what our inner being thinks that label stands for, rather than some totally objective meaning behind the label. And that's gotten really true. It comes from some of our brain functions, and I know you talk about that some on your programs and in your own work. But for me, when I talk about labels, I'm talking about the ones that have become negative and dehumanized. Now, I'm not unrealistic in that it's possible to speak and never have a label that means something negative, but it needs to be have a meaning there, not because of what we place there, but because that's what the word is intended to convey. We react to labels based on what they convey to us, and the person's using them, use them based on what's conveyed to them. And I think what we're seeing in our society and in our world, that those two sets of meanings can be totally polar opposite sometimes and create a lot of tension, a lot of what I say in politics is all out war, certainly a lot of discord and upset, and many of the problems that happen even within our society come back to those labels and what we put behind them.
Okay, so you mentioned labels doing something with the brain. So why are labels so detrimental? What does it do to the brain when we start having categories for different people?
Well, it actually begins before the it begins with the function that the brain has to do. The brain gets 400 billion pieces of information every second. If we were together, I'd set you down and say, hey, look at this, look at that, listen to this. Now, remember, your brain just received those things that you directed your conscious attention to, but it received everything else around you, and even the things that you are not aware of through your senses, because the brain is picking up all those things that our mind screens out as being sort of irrelevant in general. But the brain, unfortunately, it does all of that on autopilot. Obviously, we can't consciously process 400 billion pieces of information a second and anywhere come close to saying consciously where they go. The problem comes in that even before we start using a label, the brain has been putting information behind that label. And the brain has a preference for negative information. In fact, it gets a little dopamine reward every time it processes a negative piece of information. So that means it gets rewarded for doing those, and it does them first. It's just the natural, chemical, physical part of our brain does that. You can see that doesn't have a whole lot to do with where our intentions are or what our awareness is. But the brain has that negative preference, and it doesn't process the positive until it's processed all those negatives, which is kind of scary.
Well, you know, I say that the brain is here to it skews negative because our whole makeup, our body and mind, they're all made up, our body mostly, is all made up to keep us alive. All right. So that's why we have skin over our bones. So our skin is not, you know, for our bones are not exposed. That's why we have our heart behind a whole sack of. So basically, our brain is there to try to keep us alive. So it alerts us to negativity because it's potential danger that we might need to be aware of. The problem is, I think, is that sometimes we don't know how to differentiate between what's truly dangerous for us, life or death wise, and just some thing that's interpreted as negative that may not even be negative.
And that's certainly true. Some of the things that are determined to be negative are picked up from how the brain has observed and processed things and seen what we've done with our conscious mind and our conscious use of those labels, or what it hears on the news, what it hears in conversations, what it experiences. So what it considers negative comes built with all of that. And it is. It's a system that's designed for our safety. It's a system that's designed to help us to live that full and confident life without having to be sitting around worrying all the time. What have I missed? What have I missed? What's not good here? But the problem is we've gotten so busy in our society that we're pulled constantly this way and that way and the other way. We're running both mentally and almost sometimes physically from one thing to another. And so the brain is being left to kind of do its own thing. We are trusting it to always bring us the good that we need, and then simply only alert us to the bad. But it doesn't work that way. It gets overloaded with the negative, and the more negative coming in, the more those neural pathways get used. They actually get stronger, they get bigger, they actually bundle together and make what I call superhighways in the brain for certain types of negative things that that we have come to focus on. And so that automatic thing can deteriorate an otherwise good label, and we can find ourselves not considering people, reacting to situations based on what they are, or even exploring what or who they may be, but based on this image that's built up behind that negative, the negative in that label. And you see that with, let me just say, let's illustrate it with homelessness. A lot of people see homeless people on the street. I'm very aware that in New York, you have a huge amount of homeless people and have for a long time. But a lot of people see a homeless person and their mind says, get away from them. Warning, warning, drug addict. Warning, warning, not a kind of person you want to be around. And yet the majority of homeless persons aren't that way.
You mentioned that is a big trigger, like homeless. What does homeless mean? Lazy, criminal, drug addict, smelly, dangerous, violent. So a lot of people associate criminal. A lot of people associate homelessness with all of these different attributes, and homelessness doesn't mean any of those things by default.
No, it doesn't. And that label and how our interior has created this image of danger behind it keeps us from doing the things that can actually help people. I know there's always some people in every group where, yes, there is some danger amongst the homeless, especially where there's large congregations of, and there's also some attraction to criminality, even to violence, and to drugs and alcohol. Sometimes it's not because they're addicted. Sometimes they're numbing the pain and haven't gotten addicted yet. Other times they're just trying to get by from day to day. We are less able to take care of the people that are getting by day to day because that negative image in our brain keeps shutting us down from those more positive responses. It's created its own little circle of how we act and what we expect, and it can lead us to not even think that something can be done about it. That'll affect even our laws and our legislation, because if the people considering the legislation, no matter how good maybe someone was that wrote it, if other people are responding it to this way, or if the bureaucrats who are writing the rules and things based on the law respond that way, you can end up filtering out the good intent and coming up with the bad. The other thing that happens, say you're a person who does pay attention to the homeless and you are trying to be a part of the solution. Maybe you're part of a compassion service that's your target. That's your people that you are seeking to actually assist. You have to guard so carefully, because several of us that have done that through major short portions of our life, we find that those negatives build up. And all of a sudden, the good heart we had when we went in to help with things and to seek to assist people begins to deteriorate, and we don't even see it. Can I illustrate with a little story there?
Sure.
I worked for a man. I had just to put a little context, I had a major physical problem that happened in my life, and coming out of it, I had a major depression. And because of that, I ended up out of leadership for a time. And I ended up doing something related to where my heart is. And I worked as a night shelter manager in a Salvation Army men's shelter. My boss, a younger man than I, really great guy. When I first arrived, he was so gung-ho. He loved his job. He couldn't keep himself from talking about, I love my job. I love helping these people. He also ran the food pantry, and he loved taking care of that. And helping people that way. But I noticed a creeping thing that came up in his conversation where he started saying, oh, it's just another one of those old drunks. They just cycle through here every year. They just cycle through here. They're not interested in being helped. They're not interested in getting better. And from there, it went to a point where he actually began to not like what he was doing. His heart for the people had become co-opted by the negatives that had built up behind his label from experience. And he actually ended up quitting the job that before he absolutely loved, the hope that he knew was helping. All of that faded into the background because of the negative that had fed in behind that label of homeless for him and made it something he just couldn't tolerate. That's pretty sad, but it happens to people in compassion services. It happens to those of us who have a heart to help people and just do that as part of our life. If we aren't minding what's happening by that automatic function in the brain, it then can dehumanize it. Oh, that's another, that's just one of those old drunks, or certainly it turns negative instead of hopeful in any meaning. At least it becomes less descriptive and more of a pronouncement, a negative pronouncement. And that happens to people in business, between employers and employees. It happens in politics real easily for people who get involved to try and move things in a positive direction. Yes, and of course, as I mentioned, it happens to us as individuals. It happens in families. Maybe you have a child or an uncle who keeps getting in trouble, or every time they come to dinner, they seem to lead the conversation down to a negative and it turns into an argument. And next thing we know, we've labeled that person rather than exploring, well, why? Why is he acting this way? Why does he feel this compulsion to do and say things they do? And we start treating them as the label and image in our brain that we've had from experience rather than as the person they are, and wondering, where are the good parts here? And how can I reinforce those? So how can I get close enough to be a part of the solution? And that, even in our own families, disrupts Thanksgiving dinners and everything else.
Yeah. Do you know why? Because it's interesting, at the beginning of the show, you talked about how the brain gets kind of a dopamine hit from negativity and being able to lean negative. So why would the brain get like a dopamine hit from negativity? What's the reward there?
Well, the reward there is hypervigilance. I mean, in its original need and function, it's hypervigilance. It's dopamine makes the motor functions, the fine-tuned motor functions, become on full alert and full readiness, so you don't have to stop and think about them. They're there ready to meet the enemy, ready to tackle that situation. They give us enough of a good feeling about it that I think most of us who've been around long, we recognize that, say, in a war, sometimes when a soldier is engaging the enemy, the combatant who is shooting back at him, he gets this rush, I'm going to go out and we're going to take care of this enemy. I know we had some situations in Vietnam all those years and years ago where those ended up in sponsoring a massacre, and the guys who participated had this real rush, almost a euphoria of what they were doing to the enemy. But that was based on the dopamine. That was part of that fight and flight mechanism, and that's what dopamine handles and is intended to handle, is preparedness for fight and flight. So, you know, it gets this little reward because it perceives this is somewhere we might need that to be increased. And so when you get more and more of it coming quicker and quicker, it can become so, it can actually become addicted. That's the way I put it. It can become addicted to that dopamine and the things that seem to be positive about it, but it's applying that in situations where that isn't the case, and that's not what's needed or beyond where it's needed. It also, the dopamine helps us, it shuts down our reason, and it shuts down our cognition. I know that sounds pretty gross, pretty broad sweep there, but it shuts down the reason, especially in the sense of why are we doing what we're doing? It gives us justifications that we would otherwise call cognitive distortions. So we get all or nothing and all those kinds of thoughts. So on dopamine, those are the kind of thoughts the brain prefers, again, for a reason. But most of us don't live in a situation and seldom go into situations where that's really what is needed. And so the cognitive distortions for a brain that's left on autopilot, that's feeding mostly on the negative because of the volume that comes in, it starts feeding on cognitive distortions, not realizing that it's left behind logic and reasoning and the cognition that gets shut down. That's the thing that allows you to begin to look at that other person as a human being rather than an object. Obviously, very much you can see how the dehumanized part has come behind that label then. And it leads to eventually, if it's constant all the time, and I think we can see this in too much of the politics and some of the other things that are happening. Sometimes it happens to activists who have great causes and great reasons for what they do. But it leads to a condition called perseveration. It's not perseverance. That's a positive, but perseveration is where you have an uncontrolled repetition or continuation of a response, and that starts in the brain. There's this continual response to that word, to that situation, to that need, that every time they open their mouths, they have to talk about a certain thing. It may be out of context. They have to propose a certain solution. It may not be apropos to the situation at the moment, or they will take an action just because it's become so ingrained in their response in this fight-flight mode that they're in that interferes with their effectiveness. It interferes with their interactions with other people. They have a trouble keeping on task with the behavior. That's why some of these things that start out good end up deteriorated into some really awful kind of things happening by the same person. Because that perseveration, if it kicks in, can shift you. It makes you less flexible, both about the topics and the activities you engage in. So, you know, that cycle, that negative cycle and the preferences that go with it that are fed by the dopamine and the things it does chemically in the brain, when it's out of control, it's not our friend anymore. It's taking over territory that keeps us from being the effective people, the kind of confident and value-based people that we want to be. On autopilot, it does that, and we don't notice it until something comes up with ourselves, some reaction or someone's reaction back to us, and it puts it suddenly in perspective again, and we go, oh, whoa. I can give you a personal example. It's totally related, unrelated in some ways. But I was the executive director of World Relief in Chicago. I had the largest refugee and refugee agency in the city or service. I had the third largest immigration service in the city and a small homeless service in that city. And, you know, my heart was in all of those things. But I'd go to a meeting with my directors and I'd end up exploding. I would explode over an issue until one day I was in my financial officer's office and I had one of those episodes and she looked at me and she said, "You're acting like a 3-year-old and you need to stop doing that." That hit me in the face in a way that knocked some sense into me enough to take and step back and say, "Whoa, wait a minute. This isn't the me that I see myself being. This isn't the person or the kind of thing that I know is productive." And, you know, I have overcome so much of that in the years since then, in fact, almost immediately. And it's become such a focus in my mind that when those negatives start coming up, because they're attached now to this need to be my better self, the brain doesn't stop in the negative department and explode anymore. It goes to, okay, take a breath. Now, what's the issue here? Get on task. What's helpful? What's just reactionary? And have a whole different person in those situations. So that's kind of how the negative becomes that driver that we don't want him in the driving seat.
Yeah, you know, this negative bias it that the brain likes to indulge in. It affects every area of our lives there. And, you know, when it comes to politics, which I know that's your thing is politics. And it's my thing. Yeah, it's my thing, too. Maybe not so much on this show, but it's my thing, too. So, you know, when we say labels, because everyone puts themselves into these categories, I'm conservative, I'm liberal, I'm, you know, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, I'm an independent, I'm a libertarian. And, you know, when you say those things, instantly, the idea of what you think that word means comes to mind. And, you know, what I found is there's some people who call themselves one of those names, not because they agree with every single thing under that platform, it's because maybe of one or two issues, and they just slap a label on themselves for one of these two, for one or two issues. So, I mean, how do you see the labels in politics affecting how we get things done or how we don't get things done?
Well, the labels in politics are really what you're talking about. Excuse me, I got to clear my throat. We have the label for ourselves. We know what it means to us, and we know what that label doesn't mean to us. We also hear a label, but our brain does the same thing. It says that person means X, Y, Z. And so it attributes all those issues that we have problems with to that person. It attributes the negative actions and responses of people who carry that label, the motivations, everything. We define this person in the nth degree, and for way too many people now in our society, and it's been growing so much stronger over the last decade, two decades maybe, but really more visible in the last decade, it becomes a reason where we don't treat the person with the other label as a human being. We see them as what our image of that label is. We see them as a danger. We see them as an enemy. I like to say sometimes that because of what's behind our label, we can't see beyond the end of our fingers if someone else we think has that label. So I've talked to a number of people, and I'm talking to more all the time as I'm getting more active and trying to be a part of the solution. And they say, oh yeah, I've had friends, family members, not just Facebook people, but real live family members, people I've been friends with for years, worked with. And I talk about something, I'm going to go conservative on this and then come back, okay? If not, sometimes I go the other way with my illustrations, but maybe a person that is known to be fairly, you know, pretty conservative, or at least that's the image the other person has of them, they start talking about, let's say, like homelessness, the need for supporting people in need, the need to do things, the need to not be judgmental, and they say, oh, no, I didn't know this about you. You're this diehard liberal. You're the worst of the worst. And they cut off that relationship just like that. They know it isn't that way, but because the label has so much power in their actions and reactions, it actually drives them to drop years of positive relationship and back off because of what they think that label means, and therefore put everybody with that label into that category. Almost all of us have experienced that happening to us, no matter where we sit on that political spectrum. Part of the problem is that we see this enacted on a continual basis within the governmental processes, between the administrative process and the legislative, within the legislative bodies. It has become, and again, it has become the wording of a lot of media approaches. They tell us, well, that's what the people want to hear. And so they feed that. Well, they're feeding this terrible, terrible mechanism that's making people want to pull apart. That's keeping their mental things related to politics in a fight and flight mode for every issue because of the political label. And so, well, I can't cooperate with them. I've got to win this battle and get my point through. If everybody's thinking that way, you end up without having dialogue. You have a lot of talk going on, but you're not going to convince the other person of your point, and you're not going to, they're not going to convince you. You can say what you want, and nowadays it's deteriorated to a lot of those times of like in committees and things like that. You don't hear reasoning over the different reasons people hold a position. Like they might not even know it in some cases. You just hear this battle. As I've gone out and spoken to some of the county level, the local level, organizations. So far, I've not had an invite in to the Libertarians out here in Nebraska. We don't have as much organization just due to numbers amongst that range of people. But as I go to the Republican ones and the Democratic ones and talk about labels, just simply talk to people, get to know them. I keep hearing another thing that's disturbing me. And that is they're saying, I don't like how the political party, the Democratic National Committee, the Republican National Committee, it depends on who I'm with and who others are. I don't like how that committee, who's over my label, is saying, I have to agree with XYZ, and I don't agree with all of XYZ. I agree with some values and some attitudes, but I don't agree on all the applications. And they're resenting it. And they say, I don't feel like I'm a human anymore to them. I feel like that's an authoritarian instructor that's just dictating down and doesn't have any time to really listen and hear the people below. So that's a pretty comprehensive part of our whole political system that we have, or I have been taught. I realize I'm older than a good lot of people alive nowadays, but things that I have been taught and that I've seen operating in a positive way, where politics was a way for the concerns of the people to reach to persons who have been elected in order to work together to find the best solution. And instead, it's turned around, where those people who were feeding from the issues brought up by the people are actually creating the issues. I even see a lot of gaslighting going on, where they take this, that, and the other thing. And by the time you're done listening to them, and especially if you kind of have their label too, you begin to question yourself, well, maybe that's true. Maybe I'm that way. Maybe these other people are that way. It shuts things down. And that's what really concerns me. How are we going to have dialogue? How are we going to do the things that explore and refine and make corrections to end up with what's best for the citizenship, for what I love to call we the people, but I understand that can be a political flag word nowadays. But it gets balled up by this fight. It's got balled up by the fact that politics isn't now about getting the best for everyone. It's about winning.
Yeah. You know, and you mentioned something very interesting. It's like once somebody says, oh, well, I'm conservative, or I'm liberal, or I'm a Democrat, then, you know, speaking of people who don't talk to each other because of their political labels, you know, once you hear that, once you hear someone who is opposite of you on political things, you automatically go into like your corner, like, oh, you're one of those liberals. Huh? You're one of those liberals. So then now, not only does all those labels and stereotypes that you have registered in the back of your mind about liberals, now your mind is closed. Oh, you're one of those liberals. So, you know, whatever you say now that you've been typecast as a liberal, now whatever you say isn't really going to penetrate a lot of times with people who attach themselves to the opposite identity. I also think that we marry our labels. So sometimes we do this, and not everyone does it, but sometimes we do this. We get over-identified with the label or the movement, and then we forget that we're individuals. Right? So, you know, if someone calls themselves a conservative or a liberal, they tend to get married to that. Well, I'm a conservative, so that means this, and then your mind closes to listening to anybody else's point of view, because that's the opposition. And we can't give an inch to the opposition. So not only do labels disrupt progress, but we end up marrying our labels.
And when we do that, we might end up a place where we're talking to someone with the other label, and we often find ourselves saying the same catchphrases over and over and over and over again. And so we're actually shutting down the possibility of really talking to them, because we're throwing out these things that may not even be things we deeply believe. They certainly aren't. They are known to be negatives to the other party, and therefore, you know, we're throwing rocks. But you see, that's what that perseveration is. That's when we see that perseveration kicked in and controlling the person in the conversation, at least in that field of politics. And it is, yeah, it just robs the possibility of forward progress.
Yeah, that's a great point. That, you know, we a lot of times if we're deeply, you know, involved in politics, if we're very politically aware, sometimes we start doing the talking points. Oh well, this, you know, I'm a conservative, so that means this, and then you come back with a conversation. No, this, yeah. So we start throwing out talking points. We start discussing what we heard a commentator say on TV. We start repeating what they said. So instead of actually sitting down and genuinely getting into us as humans and what we really believe. And like I said, I find that a lot of people who are going by these kinds of any label aren't actually fully engaged into everything that label is supposed to mean. They may like one or two major issues. Like a lot of people who are, let's say, who are against abortion, they may call themselves conservative, but when you talk to them, they're actually quite liberal, but they call themselves conservative because they perceive the support for that very important issue they believe in coming from one side or the other, but they're actually not all that conservative. So we have to be careful not to whittle our own identity down to just one issue.
And I like to use that word whittle. One of the targets that, again, I'm using that bad word. Sounds like fight and flight immediately, doesn't it? Anyhow, one of the groups that I am hoping to have some impact with is freshman legislators. A freshman legislator may come in with several different kind of reasons why they went into politics. I mean, who would want to go into the mess that's out there now? But there are people that do. And so I'm giving most of them the credit as having some very altruistic and reasonable as well as very important things that they hope to accomplish. They're hoping to break gridlock, hoping to do something that they see as needed by the nation. There's a few here and there that go in because, oh, I like power and I like prestige. But I think most of them that I've seen and listened to or studied about, they actually have some very good thoughts. Well, they go into the legislature. We won't differentiate which legislature or where. And they're the freshman legislators. Okay, now they just had a label put on them. You're a freshman legislator. And in my idea, as a system person, you're the one that needs educated to hear on how we do things. There's a certain amount to that too. What it takes to be a good supporter of your party here, about the fact that you need to just be quiet for a while and earn your right to speak. All these kind of things. So you have these round pegs, and they're trying to slide them into square holes. And if the person isn't cooperative, they'd start shaving off the edges of that person's reality. And you can see that they become a captive of what's wrong in the system, because they're taught by the system that I can't do anything unless I do it the system's way. And yet the system isn't fair. I got to thinking about that one day. I did work with Bosnians, and it scares me sometimes that because I see things in dialogue here that's divided into us, them, and it was the us, them, the taking advantage of us, them labels that actually led to that terrible war and the terrible atrocities in that Bosnian war. Because I've met the people, I've been to the countries, I've seen the goodness of the people and the land and their values. And yet they were able to twist all of that. But, oh dear, I'm going to lose my track here. I see that creeping into what's happening around us. And I see, looking at the politics, I'm going like, wait a minute. Now the top people in politics, the leaders, have a lot of control here. And they use that control. They can punish another legislator for not being in their party. They can punish them on committee assignments and which ones they get, or whether they're allowed to speak along. The system is designed to put the speeches into little tiny boxes. There's practicality behind all of that. But when that's the way it's administered, you have an authoritarian structure within the legislation, the legislative process that's supposed to be supporting a democratic and republican an ideal, because our country is a democratic republic or republican democracy, whichever you want to turn it around. And I'm going like, this doesn't make sense. And then because of I work with so many different groups of people who've been behind those dehumanized labels, I began to automatically, my mind does nowadays, to look at what's happening. And I saw right away then, this is that labels. And now that I'm learning much more about the brain science, I'm so glad for the things that they've learned about our brain and how the science of the brain all works. I'm going like, it's just playing right into, it's playing right into the fight and flight. We don't go to the legislature to come up with a good solution for everyone. We go to the legislature to win our point. The whole language, the whole structure, sitting on two sides of the aisle. Every bit of it is designed for fight and flight, and trying to either get the other person to back off, that's flight, or to join you and fight with you.
Absolutely. You know, you made a great point with the whole freshman thing. You know, you first get into Congress, and you would think, you know, that because you're newly elected, that people would listen to you more. Like, okay, you're brand new, so you haven't been here at all. So you're fresh, you're new. So we actually should probably be listening to you because you just got elected by the people, rather than some of the people who've been there a lot longer. They become a creature of the system, and some of them, not all, but some of them become disconnected from the constituents that they that elected them, and they become a creature of the machine. And their views start to diverge from why they were elected. They start getting to the what you were talking about, the power, the need for power, all of these things. So I would think they would listen to the freshmen more. But you're right. They go in. The freshmen are told, sit down and shut up and stay here for a few terms, and then you'll know better. You know? So that's no good. But so let's move forward here. So how do we, in your opinion, address this issue of labels and being able to listen to people with a more open mind and kind of dropping our assumptions on what we think the opposite label means?
Well, you know, when we talk about labels and the negative things like we've talked here today, a lot of times when we see that negative happen, we are looking to see where did it come from, who did this, who started it, or who's doing it. So we're looking to find either somewhere we can point our finger, somewhere we can share blame, or to cause our for shame. And the first thing we need to do is we need to help people understand that underlying that drive within us that tries to do that judgment thing, first, we need to acknowledge how our brain works. We need to take a look at this negative process and how it can creep up on us and how it can make us into who we didn't want to be. When we do that and we say, oh, but that's a human being too, and that same kind of chemical, et cetera, process is happening in their brain, it allows us to quit trying to look for the shame and the blame, to quit pointing the fingers and look at the humans. And when we see that other person, when we see the party is made up of humans, when we see our constituents again as humans, we now have a foundation for dialogue and positive forward movement. So I think the first step is to do a little education on what we've learned about the brain and how, without you knowing it, you've been buying into some things mentally. And they have affected it. And it's not really hard to do that. When you get people together, or like in the small groups, when I go into the Republican and the Democratic out here, their county meetings, and I teach this, they get it. And they start applying it. Oh, my. Yeah, I've got to overcome that because I'm not being able to go out there and help even with voter registration or advocating for people to support our candidate, our platform. If I and they are both reacting this way, and what they need to be done is treated as a human. So that opens us to another thing that everybody knows. Well, I think everybody knows, but then again, I find those blanket statements usually aren't totally true. But that opens us up to the ability to listen. And I ran across an organization that works on listening, and they have four principles for listening first. And that's what we need, listening first. Listen first to understand. Be curious and open to learning. Suspend judgment and extend grace. Maximize diversity of the perspectives. Now that assumes one other thing that I left out here between those two. When we understand how the brain works, we can actually influence that so that we can take that negative piece and get it attached to a positive, so that instead of ending up running off over here to just fight and flight, it also brings in those positive things. It opens us up to reasoning. It opens us up to cognition. Without the cognition, we aren't going to be curious. We're not going to be opening to learning. And it opens us up to listening well, so that we don't get all judgmental. And so that we go like, oh yeah, they're a human too, just like me. You know, my grandmother told me a story when I was a young boy, and it has influenced my life. It has influenced what I've done for my whole working career, which is work on smashing labels. When she was a little girl walking across the prairie home from school, I know nowadays she'd be considered to have negligent parents, but that was a different area and lots of different people. There was a gypsy camp set up along the side of the road. Now, I don't know how many people are aware of how negative the label gypsy used to be and is in many cases still. As she came towards the camp, there was a little girl about her age playing in the ditch. And my grandmother picked up a rock. She threw it at the little girl and hit her. And when the little girl cried, my grandmother realized that that's a little girl just like me. Behind the label gypsy is a little girl just like me. She spent the rest of her life always looking behind the labels to meet the humans that were there, regardless of how she might have felt about an issue or a group of people. And she didn't do blanket judgments against people. And that affected how I do. That affected how I've been approaching. I'm always looking to meet the humans. When I worked with people from different cultures, I've worked with lots of different cultures and many races, at least and a lot with the major races of our nation. My first thing is treat them like a human being. You know, that opens so many doors. It opens acceptance. It opens respect. It opens listening. It opens people up so they can feel safe to talk to you, regardless of what their feeling is about your race, your position, where you're from. And it all goes back to that. We have to get this fight and flight redirected so that when it comes up, we also see the human. Now we're going to train our soldiers the other way. I understand that. That when they're in combat, they need to, they're going to have to lock that down, or the moral equivalency thing will eat them up, just like it does now when they come home and have PTSD. It's where it all gets started. But that's not the way we live here, and we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You can do it simply. You can ask your brain to give you two positives for every negative bit of information it gets. For every time you say something negative, you can ask it that it would automatically bring to your mind two human positives, or at least negative things about that person or that situation. And because the brain was made to be controlled by and pleased the conscious mind, and because the brain has this drive to please the conscious mind, it will do that simple exercise. It will automate it. So that now when the negative information comes on, it hits this negative inhibition. Yes, it gets its dopamine boost, so it's prepared for fight or flight if necessary. But it also saying, but this and this, throwing it over into the positive form pathways of your mind, where you start getting other chemicals of the mind, such as serotonin kicking in, who have positive things like opening the reason, helping the cognition to really focus and put the pieces together to creating positive solutions. So we need to do that. We need to take conscious control of our mind. Don't have to do it second by second, but we have to simply be aware. What's happening in there? How do I need to tell my mind that it needs to operate and be confident that, hey, that mind wants to be controlled by the conscious?
Yeah, absolutely. And in our closing minutes here, I'm curious on what got you into this? Like, you could be anything you want to be. What's gotten you into this, the science and ideas around labels and eliminating them?
Well, that teaching by my grandmother and watching her example set a stage. My own parents were always helping people that others thought were down and out or didn't want to associate with. So I had the example in the home. So I had this natural inclination, and also because I have a spiritual inclination that says that that the God I serve thinks that way and has that value system. So I just, it was just natural for me to want to be interacting with human beings. And then I brought to that looking at them as humans. And so that's governed my whole life. Now, why did I get into the political side of this label thing? Well, in doing the working with the labels, what I realized was my job was to help these people who have been labeled to get rid of the label they've put on themselves so that they can begin to see who they have the potential to be, because then they can start working out from that or working against the label, and also bringing them into the human sphere of others who use that label without knowing the human side of it. So that they can start experiencing them as human beings. So that's what I've been doing for my work life, some 52 plus years. Then when I retired, I'm a writer, and I decided it was time to write a book rather than just the other things I was doing. And so I never write anything without a motive behind it. I wrote a thriller called A Certain Mercy. It is about homelessness. When you read it, you won't miss that. But the thriller part of it will carry you through, just like any other really good thriller will do. People read that book, they end up hitting that lesson that was my ulterior motive, and they start seeing homeless people as different. They start seeing them as individuals. They start seeing the fact that there could be any number of situations that got them to the place that they are. The people in my book all end up dying, and it's all related to having been homeless and related to the issues that brought them to that situation. I got some more books that I'm going to write that way, each on a different topic. But the other thing about retiring was it gave me a little more time to think. And so the political thing, which had been eating away in the back of my mind, but it wasn't my thing, you know, I was too busy with the other, just grew and grew until I finally realized, no, this whole thing has a lot to do with labels as well. And I laid aside my retirement, and my heart bought into becoming part of the solution, and that's what I'm trying to do.
All right. Well, that's pretty good. Pretty good stuff. So is there a way people find out more about you, about the book you just mentioned, or anything like that?
Yes. They can go to my website, which is William Silvanius, SILVANEUS.com, and there's a landing page there now that will allow them to go into direct contact with me, or allow them to click and on a link that takes them into that author side of my life, where that book is and any others will eventually be, and also into some of the initial programming that I'm working to design, that people who care about this issue, and lots and lots of this country has people that do care, they really aren't detached as we think they are, can let it be known that they'd like to be a part. They'd like to be a part of something like this that might help them be the greater person that they want to be, but also a positive influence in our political sphere.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on the program to talk to us about this very important topic about labels and getting rid of them and how politics is destroyed by labels and progress is destroyed by labels.
If you'd like to be a guest on the Core Confidence Life podcast, just fill out our application by going to coreconfidencelife.com/guest. That's coreconfidencelife.com/guest. We appreciate you and all your feedback. So to give us comments about the podcast or anything else, just send a message to Dennis@coreconfidencelife.com. That's Dennis@coreconfidencelife.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and all the social media outlets, of course, at Core Confidence Life. I'm your host, Dennis, from New York City, giving you higher consciousness, lower stress, hard-hitting manhood issues, with just a side of cornball humor.